high-speed digital radio, colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
The government says it's determined to get its Rwanda bill, which is designed to ensure migrants can be sent to the African country, through Parliament today. It suffered repeated defeats in the House of Lords, but Rishi Sunak has said both Houses of Parliament will have to keep sitting and voting until it's passed. An anti-Semitism campaigner who was labelled openly Jewish by police and threatened with arrest during a pro-Palestinian protest in London has been offered a meeting with a senior officer from the Met. Assistant Commissioner Matt Twist wants to apologise to Gideon Falter personally for his treatment 9 days ago. According to a new study from Ofcom, around a quarter of 5 to 7-year-olds now own a smartphone and 3/4 use a tablet computer. The study also found half now watch live-streamed content, which is up from 39% last year. Rani Govinda is from the NSPCC.
We know tech companies often set the bar at 13 to be on their services. So it really is their job to make sure when they're setting these standards that they're enforcing them in practice.
That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Stephen Davis.
Why do I race for life? For my biggest cheerleader, the best strawberry pancake maker, my fave hair braider and matching PJ buddy. The most forgetful person I know, but the one who makes me feel so happy and calm. She ran with me in her tummy, with me in the pushchair, and now with me by her side. My mum's name is Crystal, and I'm racing for her.
No matter how cancer affects us, life is worth racing for. Sign up to your local event at raceforlife.org by the 29th of April to get 30% off entry in partnership with headline sponsor Standard Life.
Coming up, metaphorically speaking.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio. Colorful,
Delia, Delore,
Colorful Radio.
Hello and welcome to Metaphorically Speaking with me, Delia Delore. If you've not heard of the show before, welcome and get ready to learn with us as we dissect popular mottos, mantras and metaphors. We trace their origins and find how they translate to everyday life. Each week we have a special guest who resonates with their chosen expression. Today's guest is Christian Weaver. Christian is an incredibly articulate, bright, and committed advocate. Throughout his work, he has been clear-thinking, hard-working, and has demonstrated a sound knowledge of the law and procedure. And he was the winner of the Legal Aid Newcomer of the Year Award 2023 at the Legal Aid Practitioners Group Legal Aid Lawyer of the Year Awards 2023. Get out your chisel and hammer and prepare for today's mantra. You are the sculptor of your own masterpiece. It was actually chosen by our guest, Christian Weaver. It's an interesting mantra with a wide variety of interpretations. And while we shall break down some of our own theories and draw our own thoughts on it, I'm kind of thinking, where do we start? Well, like many a great sculptor, we must first look upon our raw materials and assess what we want to create, then get a rough shape, begin to refine it, adding more and more detail with each layer we strip away, until at least, or shall I say at long last, we have created a masterpiece. So come along as we chip away and become the sculptor of our own masterpiece. People say that in order to become a master of something, you must do it for 10,000 hours, or 417 days, or 14 months, which, let me tell you, is a lot. But where does one start? Well, sadly, you start at day one. No one starts as a master. Wouldn't that be nice, huh? To bypass all the failure and frustration and just automatically be good at something. But alas, nothing works that way. We all start as beginners, first-timers, or knobs, if you will. Anyone who has ever done anything, be it sculpting, football, or designing in the International Space Station, all started as a beginner who knew nothing, or very little at least, and just took a fancy to whatever it was that piqued their interest and thought to themselves, wow, I'd sure like to do something like this. And they were off, taking their very first step on a very long but worthwhile journey. However, I must warn you, as Gandalf once said to Bilbo Baggins,
"When all good stories deserve embellishment, you'll have a tale or two to tell of your own when you come back."
Can you promise that I will come back?
No. And if you do, you will not be the same.
That's what I thought. Sorry, Gandalf, I can't sign this. You've got the wrong hobbit.
As we venture forth on our journey to become a master and create our masterpiece, it would be wise to listen to that wise wizard, because at the end we will be changed. But as American philosopher Ralph Waldo Emerson will tell you, it's not the destination, it's the journey. Which is true, for more often than not, what we learn along the way is just as valuable as where we end up. I mean, Joseph Campbell wrote an entire book on it that is still used today to tell stories of people going on impossible journeys, both literal and metaphorical, and overcoming all sorts of odds to become heroes, legends, or as the title of this episode, a sculptor of their own masterpiece. While we are taking our first steps or assessing what we want to create, one should make sure to sit down and ask why. Why do we want to pursue this path? Or why do we want to learn how to sculpt marble? Well, interestingly enough, we can look to one of the greatest artists in the world for some direction here: Michelangelo, Ludovico, Buonarroti, Simoni. Or you probably know him as simply Michelangelo. And if the penny still hasn't dropped, the bloke who sculpted the statue of David. And if you're still not sure, that really famous guy who made that really famous statue of that really famous man. It is said that as a young boy, his father, who was a moderately wealthy businessman in Italy in the 1400s, paid for Michelangelo to go to school and learn. But sadly for his father's pocketbook, Michelangelo had no interest in school whatsoever. Instead, he was drawn to the amazing works of art that were being created at the time and could not take his eyes off them, going so far as to copy paintings from the various cathedrals in Florence. And therein lies our answer as to why. For the answer is as simple as it is complex. Passion. Find what you are passionate about and become the master in that. Sometimes you choose your own passion, other times it is chosen for you. But I'd wager very few who followed their true passion felt unsatisfied at the end.
Hey. Don't ever let somebody tell you you can't do something. Not even me. All right? You got a dream, you got to protect it. People can't do something themselves, they want to tell you you can't do it. You want something, go get it. Period.
They say the hardest thing to master is discipline, the grit to keep going no matter what. Sadly, if you want to be in this for the long haul, it will also have to be one of the first things you have to learn. Because without it, you will set yourself up without a solid foundation to begin. As a song my grandmother used to sing to me goes, "The foolish man builds his house upon the sand. And when the tide came in, his house was washed away. But again, as the song says, the wise man builds his house upon the rocks." And sure, it was hard work, but in the end, his solid foundation kept his house from being washed away from the tide. Sometimes doing things the hard way is the only way to do them. I have no doubt that it took the wise man longer to build his house, and maybe he had to turn down going to the pub with his mates on a Saturday night, or putting in a few extra house chores on the weekend. But that's the nature of discipline. It calls for sacrifice, to sometimes forego fun for a little more progress, to keep pushing because every day counts. So once you've got the foundation of rocks all ready to go, then and only then can the real work begin. But trust me, it is better than starting on sand and having everything washed away when the tide comes in. Discipline is the best way forward, your rock foundation, if you will, because there will be days when it doesn't seem worth it to continue, or something else will seem more appealing, which will happen. Only through discipline will you be able to enact some self-control and remind yourself that the house won't build itself upon the rock foundation. So good luck, because trust me when I say this, you don't need luck, because you have the will to finish. And like many a great person, you make your own luck.
Mr. Cruz, are you lost, sir?
What I got to do to play?
Mr. Cruz, you do not want to know the answer to that question. Now, as I was saying, as a team, we shot 56% from the line. From now on, before you leave my gym, you must pay an exit price of 50 made free throws before you can go. That's everybody.
That's a lot of free throws.
Okay, Mr. Cruz. Before you can play on this team, you owe me 2,500 push-ups and 1,000 suicides.
Damn.
Oh, and they must be completed by Friday.
Finishing that by Friday.
So we've got the what and the why for our upcoming masterpiece. But what about the how? How does one start to embark on a journey that might take a lifetime? I mean, how does one become a master or even a journeyman, which is old-time fancy speak for decent at it? Well, let's use sculpting as our example again. And also, let's use our good friend Michelangelo. I mean, sure, he would go on to become one of the world's greatest artists, but how did he get there? Did he just pick up a pencil and start drawing? Well, yes, he did, which showed initiative. And that's important. But it's also important to recognize that he didn't get there alone. He had help from other artists, people who were already masters, who guided him and instructed him along his path towards greatness. This is an important lesson in that no one creates a masterpiece alone. This is said in a much nicer way by Gary W. Weller, an American entrepreneur. No one succeeds alone, and no one fails alone. Pay attention to the people around you. Michelangelo had his mentor, Domenico Ghirlando, who saw in this young, passionate artist potential and guided his talents. And where would Michelangelo be without Domenico? He probably would have become a banker like his father, and the world would have been deprived of the masterpiece of David. And tourists around the world wouldn't have pictures of them pointing to his naughty bits, which, let's face it, are in great detail.
Working hard is important, but there's something that matters even more. Believing in yourself. Think of it this way. Every great wizard in history has started out as nothing more than what we are now. Students. If they can do it, why not us?
Let's welcome our guest, Christian Weaver. Alongside his legal practice, Christian is the founder of The Law in 60 Seconds, an initiative that has garnered recognition in prominent media outlets like the BBC and The Guardian. This initiative aims to provide practical legal knowledge to the public, empowering individuals with essential information and helping rectify power imbalances. His book, The Law in 60 Seconds, A Pocket Guide to Your Rights, published by Profile Books, has enjoyed remarkable success, frequently ranking as a bestseller on Amazon and available in all good bookshops across the country. He is currently undertaking a public legal education tour around the UK, where he is informing people of their rights. Christian, thank you so much for joining us on Metaphorically Speaking.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, you come up with a very creative metaphor, I must say. You are the sculptor of your own masterpiece. Where did that come from?
Yeah, so for me, it's always been something I've just thought really important. I can't recall exactly where I first heard it, but the idea behind it, or certainly how I've always interpreted it, is that I feel like when you enter this world, there are so many things that are almost predefined for you. So, you know, the example of the job you might have, or the types of people you should be around, and all sorts of different things. And I think one thing I've realized as I've gone through life is to just really cultivate the ability to trust in yourself, and almost from an almost soul place, actually figure out the direction you want your life to go in. So I think that's the way you can have the fullest type of life. The reason I like the notion of your own masterpiece is the fact that that means you don't have to really overconsider how perhaps other people perceive you. If you're happy with what you've created, that's the main thing. And I think the part about you are the sculptor is incredibly powerful, because fundamentally that gives a feeling of ownership. You are in control of the direction of your life. And although that can in some ways be daunting, I think there's actually something quite empowering about the notion of being in control of your life too, because that also means by extension, if maybe you don't like the direction it's going, it's within you to change it. And I think that's a really empowering way to live. So yes, that's why that one resonates for me.
All right. So you've chosen this metaphor. So I have another question for you. Have you practiced what you've preached within that metaphor?
I really try to, but there's definitely more I could do in relation to it. But I think so by almost lazily speaking, my job title is barrister, but I believe there's more to me than a job title. So something I do alongside being a barrister is I write. So I'm an author, and some barristers have books, but for me it was important because I've always thought it's really important that the public are aware of their legal rights. Now, just being a barrister doesn't ensure the public are aware of their rights. It might help ensure that the one person you're representing has on that day good representation in court, but it doesn't address a wider issue of people in society not actually being aware of their legal rights. So not many barristers do it, but I decided to write something on that so that just the average member of the public can understand those sorts of things. So for me, and actually another example is a lot of the cases I do now, almost perhaps more than those I don't, after the case, if I think really important issues have come up, I'll try and assist the family in campaigning for change for after the case, so that no other family has to go through what they've been through. And again, that's not what's necessarily expected of you as a barrister. Your job is just to represent your client and then move on to your next case. But again, for me, it was important to look at it perhaps that bit more holistically. So I'm nowhere near there yet, but I try and incorporate it where I can.
Your description of yourself there reminds me of a series called The Equalizer. This is the one that stars Queen Latifah. I don't know if you've heard of it. I think you should check it out. And basically, she was an ex-CIA and came out of it. And now, of course, she helps other people. So she cannot be part of the force, but she tries to help families who the police have not helped enough, or for some reason the path of justice has been blocked or not been carried out. So she goes that extra step to make sure that they get individual justice. But she tells her daughter that she works charities.
It's my mum's favourite show. So whenever I go home back to Nottingham to see mum, it's always on in the background. So I'll pay a bit more attention to it now. Yeah.
Yeah, you should, because, you know, of course there's always a kind of moral to the story, but it does show you how there are people in this world who do go the extra mile. And of course, sometimes it might be, shall I say, a conflict of interest, or you've done maybe not a conflict of interest, but you're doing more than you're paid to do because you want to help that person. Do you find yourself in that situation?
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I would always say professional boundaries I would always maintain because that's important and whatnot. But I actually see it differently. And I've always held the view that sometimes in courtrooms, huge failings that society will never hear about outside of that courtroom are exposed. And I think if you do adopt the approach of as a barrister of once you're in that hearing, you close the case and move on to the next, I feel there's almost a bit of a duty on you to not do that. And actually, if you your eyes have seen some huge failings that will literally lead to other people potentially dying, I think there's a bit of an obligation on you to see if you can in some way benefit that, almost on a human level, if not a professional level. So I don't see it as a conflict, actually. I see it as almost an honor to be in this position where, you know, I have access to these rooms and I'm able to cross-examine witnesses and find out the truth about matters, and almost just the obvious extension to then try and better society a little bit afterwards upon hearing that information. So, yeah, I'd say that's how I see it.
Okay. It's going back to our metaphor. Christian, earlier you told us how the metaphor resonates with you, and it made me think about that you can perhaps create the life that you want if you put yourself first, if you try to plan. So creating, planning, they're two different kind of words, but they're still very active words. And if you don't plan, then you won't be able to do the things that you would like to do. And likewise, I think planning takes a certain amount of strength, because if you don't have the strength, or maybe not even the strength, the belief in yourself, if you don't believe in yourself to a certain degree, you will not start planning to create the life that you want to live in. Do you have any kind of thoughts about what I've just said?
Sure, of course. Planning is a really key part, I feel. And I do agree that self-belief is required. I also think self-belief is a little bit like a muscle, and something that almost unfortunately sometimes only comes from first having an experience and then being able to draw from that in your evidence bank that you're able to do something. So I am a big believer in, I think I heard Will Smith say it actually, but attacking your fears. So identifying what you're scared of and actually proactively going out there to attack that. And that doesn't mean trying to, you know, defeat your fear in one go, but just taking the tiniest of baby steps towards it every single day. And it's strange, actually. I think there are very few things that can't be overcome with that small but often consistent approach at chipping away at it. But I think planning is very important. And of course, one of the beauties of life is that you know, we can go on these adventures and we never quite know where it's going to take us. But I think with a plan, when you're met with moments of decision where you could go one way or another, because you have a pre-established plan, it gives you some perspective to establish, okay, well, this route is actually better than what I'd planned, so it probably makes it's probably a good idea to go on it. Or this route isn't actually as good as my current plan, so I may as well stay on that or try and go for something closer. So I think planning is very important, even if you don't actually then follow the plan. But it just gives you a baseline to know that if all else fails, if you follow that plan, you can be, broadly speaking, heading in the right direction.
You know, we've been talking about this metaphor and we've been mentioning the word sculpture a lot, but the word masterpiece, I think that needs defining as well. And I think that in our own definitions, they may differ, but ultimately it becomes a masterpiece in terms of what, I mean, who says that a masterpiece is a masterpiece? You know, society says it. Whereas if we are creating our own masterpiece, then it means that we are creating what is good for us, isn't it? How do you see the definition of masterpiece?
Absolutely. Because the reality is we don't all start from the exact same footing. So you can never truly compare yourself to somebody else. But what you can do is knowing who you are, knowing the great things that have happened in your life, knowing the not so great things that have happened in your life. With all of that being your reality, you can create something that to you is your masterpiece. And I think that's why I love, actually, it's not the sculptor of a masterpiece, it's the sculptor of your own. It really adds that personal touch. So Yeah, I think it's such a personal thing, but I think there's, I like to believe that within all of us, there is, with a bit of planning and a bit of thinking and, you know, a bit of self-development, developing confidence. It's a journey I think is underrated, but I think we all go on. But yeah, you have the potential to develop something quite beautiful, even if only in your own eyes.
You're also an author. Tell us some more.
Of course, yes. So I'm the author of a book called The Law in 60 Seconds, A Pocket Guide to Your Rights. And the idea of The Law in 60 Seconds is to educate the everyday public on their everyday legal rights. So that can range from your rights if you are stopped and searched by the police, if you need a refund in a shop, if you're overcharged in a taxi, if your landlord's trying to keep your deposit money. And the idea for that is that I remember I was living in London back in 2018, and a lot of people I knew were being stopped and searched. And they just didn't know their rights when they were in this situation. And at this point, I wasn't yet a barrister, but I had gone through law school, so I knew my rights. And I educated my friends on that as part of a little video series I put on YouTube. And then from there, it snowballed. I got queries from members of the public saying, oh, Christian, do you know my rights in relation to this and this? And I realized that maybe it shouldn't have been such a revelation because we're not taught these things in school. But by virtue of us not being taught our legal rights in school, there's no way really for society at large to know their legal rights. Yet the tragedy is, if you fall foul of them, you can find yourself with a heavy fine or potentially even in prison. So I think at a bare minimum, a society should educate its public on their rights. We live in a society where the powers that be don't do that. So it's perhaps not appropriate really that it even falls to, for example, in my situation, a junior barrister to do such a thing. But I think it's important and it's something I'm really passionate about. And yes, the book's been out for about a year and a half now, 2 years. But it's available in all bookstores, and it's something I'm proud of because I feel it genuinely can and is helping people.
Do you think that as society is changing, that you will be updating this book in the future?
Absolutely, yes. The law isn't static, and I'm thinking in particular, I think we live in an era now where politicians are. And I want to choose my words carefully here, but I think we live in an era now where things are changing quite quickly, and sometimes I feel it's somewhat reactive. And as a result of that, yes, things can be changing quite quickly. So certainly I do intend to produce updates, but I think, or I know actually, something I did when I wrote The Law in 60 Seconds, I was cognizant that this was always a possibility. So the laws I've spoken about, by and large, are things that have existed for a long time and will likely continue to exist for a while as well. So some of your foundation, the foundational legal rights that we have. So although parts will always need updating, the vast majority is completely up to date.
Well, Christian, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been wonderful talking to you, and it's actually made me think of your chosen metaphor in a very different way. Although, you know, sometimes things just, you know, it does what it says on the packet. It's very clear what it says. But, you know, you just read things sometimes and just kind of like, yeah, okay, then. All right, then. You just kind of take it for granted. You don't really give it the meaning. And you choosing this metaphor, us researching it, me thinking about it, has really made me think that this is one of the very few metaphors that deals with positivity and tries to encourage you to do, to act, and to feel good about you and not about others or how others see you, but to feel good about you. So thank you so much for that.
No, thank you so much. And it's been a pleasure from my side as well. So thank you for having me.
Welcome back, and get ready, because in this next section, we address the inevitable along the path of creation. The F word. No, not that one. Rude. The word I'm talking about is failure, which I know can be a very scary word. But I'm here to tell you that failure is a part of the process. You will fail, but from that failure, you can find the most vital part of making a masterpiece, which is learning from your mistakes. Did you think that our good friend Michelangelo just picked up a hammer and chisel one day and just created several masterpieces? Absolutely not. He studied for years to become the talent that he was, and I'm sure that he failed more times than he succeeded, which, if you're going to make it to the end of this adventure, is something you're going to have to get used to. You just have to pick yourself back up and keep going. I'm reminded of a story of the great inventor Thomas Edison, who was once asked about his 10,000 attempts to invent the light bulb before he got it right. And he remarked that, "I haven't failed. I have just found 10,000 ways that won't work." Quite a wit, that one. Or Oprah, who was fired from her first TV job after only 7.5 months because she wasn't the right fit. You can scour the history books with great people who have failed time and time again, but persevered and became amazing success stories. As Winston Churchill once said, "Success is stumbling from failure to failure with no loss of enthusiasm." So as difficult as it is, and as hopeless as it may seem, failure is part of the journey. And it's through failure that we strive to try harder and overcome even greater odds. Think of it this way. When you do create your masterpiece, just think of how good it will be to tell the story of how you failed over and over again, yet succeeded. I mean, that would make a pretty good interview, if you ask me.
I was not a particularly good chef. I had a lot of problems at various points in my career with narcotics. I was very deservedly fired on a number of occasions. I accepted failure as a chef because I was at various times a bad chef and even a bad person. These days, if I fail, it's because I tried to do something and did not succeed. I would much rather fail gloriously than not venture, not try. Often the story I think I'm going to get ends up being another story entirely that's even better or very different. That's good. Including powerful women storytellers, for instance. That is something in which the show has lacked frequently. It's something that we consciously try to do better at, but it's also something that we fail at. You know, if you see a show that's all men talking, that's not a tendency or a predilection on my part.
As I said previously, it takes 10,000 hours to master something. To put that in perspective, that 1.142 years or 13.7 months or 416.7 days. Or, I hope you get the idea. But you also need to sleep and eat. And if you're British, like me, then you can't possibly skip afternoon tea. Oh my gosh, anywhere I go in the world, I look for afternoon tea. Or the football, soccer, for you listeners from the USA, basketball, baseball, which takes time away from your masterpiece. But also, I just want to take a moment to acknowledge that taking care of oneself is incredibly important. Your health, both physical and mental, can only help you create better, and letting those fall by the wayside will have a detrimental effect. So before you begin and strive for some sort of tortured artist, simply remember that your being will be a reflection of your creation. And so if you are doing well, then so will your masterpiece. Now, where was I? Oh yes, it takes 10,000 hours to master something. That's 1.142 years. Wait, I'm repeating myself. But it helps to be reminded just how long that is. And that's one thing. What if your masterpiece takes learning two things, or even three? I mean, look at Viking poets, or also known as skalds. They would spend years memorizing the epic sagas of their culture. They would begin as young men, and by the time they were finished, they would be old. Only then would they be considered masters.
Skjøgel! Skjøgel! Skjøgel, klovner! Skjøgel! Skjøgel! Skjøgel, klovner! Skjøgel! Skjøgel! Skjøgel, klovner! Get down! Get down! Get down!
Now that we've got that nasty business of failure out of the way, we also have to talk about another unfortunate consequence of creating one's own work of art or masterpiece, whatever that might be to the individual. Time. Yes, old Father Time, the bane of every human out there. There are 24 hours in a day, and yet it never seems to be enough. Creating something special, something important, and something worthwhile takes time, often a lot of it. You're not going to be an overnight success. Few really are. What most people call an overnight success is often a story of years of hard work and a nose to the grindstone type of mentality. So you must be prepared to stick it out and take it day by day. One of the best examples of this that comes to my mind is that of Colin Mochrie, the improviser. And if you have no idea of who I'm talking about, he's the bald guy from Whose Line Is It Anyway? Yes, him. I once remember reading an interview he gave where someone asked him the key to his success, and he simply replied that while he agrees he's talented, he said a bigger part of it was just sticking with it, because so many people will stop doing it or drop off. And when you do that, it doesn't matter how talented you are or how easily you could have made it. If you give up on yourself first, then you will almost never make it. So if you don't listen to me, then please listen to famed comedian Colin Mochrie.
Welcome to the 6 o'clock news. I'm your anchor, Pierre, because my bladder's empty. Story tonight. NASA sends probe to Uranus. People everywhere giggle.
What comes to mind when I say book 'em, Dano?
Ah-ho-ho-ho!
What comes to mind when I say Ricky Ricardo and great cigars?
Oh, tapioca.
Really? Why's that?
Wasn't that his big song? Tapioca! Tapioca!
No, Colin. I'm talking about you.
As we come to the close of our lesson today, I do want to address one thing. We've talked a lot about discipline, perseverance, and sacrifice in the name of creating one's masterpiece. However, I want to speak of one final thing. Something just as important as the other traits mentioned just a second ago, that of balance. While sacrifice is important, one must also be wary of burnout and to not push yourself beyond your limits. A healthy body that can last a long time and a healthy mind that can think in a variety of different ways is the only way you're going to succeed and be able to enjoy your work at the end of it. I know we have talked a lot about discipline, but that also comes with the knowledge of knowing when to take a break, because a wise man builds his house upon the rocks, but also he knows he can't work with a broken back. We must all persevere to achieve our goal, but also we cannot be solely dedicated to a single thing, because life contains multitudes, and a narrow-minded focus is called obsession. And if you don't think that's a big deal, I must remind you of the great novel Moby Dick, because as much as it is about whales, it's also about a lot more. Now, I'm not exactly a saint in this regard. We have all pushed ourselves too far once or twice, or had to miss a birthday or a night out at the pub with friends to get some work done. We, none of us, perfect. So people like to say. And there isn't exactly a rule book on when to take a breather, although it might be called something like chillax to bounce back, or another silly name. But the best advice I can give you is listen to your body. It will tell you what you need. If it's tired, sleep. Hungry, eat. Lonely, go grab a coffee with a friend. Just remember, if you don't take care of yourself, your masterpiece will not, so you have to. So if you take anything away from this week's metaphor, it's that balance is the best way forward. Because if you don't have balance, then you are only setting yourself up for failure.
You remember a lesson about the balance?
Yeah.
A lesson not just karate only. Lesson for whole life. Whole life have a balance. Everything be better. Understand?
Yeah, I understand. Oh, wow. You're the best friend I ever had.
You pretty okay too. Hey, go. Go. Go find the balance.
Okay. All right.
Fear not. We are on our last legs of our long and arduous journey to creating a masterpiece. And as we come to the end, I offer three pieces of advice for when that inevitable success comes. First, stay humble. I know this may seem simple, but do not forget where you started, the hardships along the way, and all the people that helped you get there. Because in the light of success, we often forget the darkness we walked through to get there, as we are simply thankful to see the sun. And no one likes an arrogant person. The second piece of advice is success is relative, and so is a masterpiece. Just because others may not see it does not take away any more from the victory, so make sure you enjoy it and revel in it. And keep going, because maybe what you see as a success is just another mile on your road to the real masterpiece. But trust me when I say this, you will get there. It will be hard, but I and many people believe in you.
I'm sorry, Rosa.
Congratulations on a terrific presentation.
Rosa, hold on. So what am I supposed to do now?
You start writing the next one.
And after you finish that one, you start on the next.
And on and on. And that's what it is to be a writer, honey.
You just keep throwing them against the wall and hoping against hope that eventually something sticks.
Listen.
Little advice from someone who's been in this business a long, long time.
On the next one, maybe try writing about what you know.
Okay, kiddo?
Yeah.
Start sharpening those pencils.
Oh, and on that last piece of advice, I almost forgot. When you do succeed, as I know you will, make sure you practice telling the story of how it happened a few times in the mirror. Because trust me, when someone invites you onto a podcast and you talk about it, you want to make sure it's good. As we wind down this week's discussion, let's not forget what the mantra means. You are the sculptor of your own masterpiece. Simple, but complex. Easy to start, but hard to finish, and wrought with bumps along the way. I hope we all took away some valuable lessons this week about the journey to success, the hardships and failures, the triumphs and greatness that await in equal parts. And if you have always wanted to, but not started that long, winding road, well, then there's no better day than today. So take step one. Thanks for listening to this episode of Metaphorically Speaking. I hope you enjoyed it and learned something new. We'd love you to share the show with your friends. And please feel free to leave a review on colorful.com or on our podcast, Metaphorically Speaking, which is on Apple, Spotify, and all major streaming platforms. If you'd like to suggest a metaphor for an upcoming show, you can reach us at Colorful.
hits, kill people vibes.
Tell me what you cook, cook, let me hear your vocal. Eyes on me, pop on my love, shoot you. Give me that pronto, the TV can follow. Where the energy, hey, oh, hey.
Cause I wouldn't be alone. Girl, you're beautiful. was worth it. No. Yeah, I got issues like you were any better. Said you would always be there, but I just lost my girl. Now I'm all alone. Since you wanna be ghost, yeah. I don't really like it, but I gotta take it. Damn, 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 girl. When you coming back? So you never coming back, yeah. I don't believe that. But right now I gotta accept the fact, yeah. For somebody else now. I wish I never loved you. Baby, you left me. Girl, I guess I'm thinking about you. You left me for somebody else. Girl, I wish I never met you. Baby, you left me. Yeah, I wouldn't be alone.
How would you have learned if I ain't leave? I guess I was way too naive. I should have been checked you, but I let you get mad, disrespectful. You couldn't be serious. What was you? Looking at my new man, wish it was you. But you dead now. Sign of the cross on your chest and your head now. Guilty is what you pled now. Left Queens, hit Brooklyn, I'm on a belt now. Stupid is what you felt now. When you see me on TV, have a meltdown. Bombs away, tryna sneak tip, hit me when slime's away. Rollie on, but I ain't got time of day. Time will tell, Chanel, get that Lagerfeld.
Now I'm alone. Since you wanna be ghost, yeah. I don't really like it, but I gotta take it. Damn, 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 girl. When you coming back? So you never coming back, yeah.